So money can't buy happiness, right? What if your relationship with money is the thing that allows you the freedom to go and make all the happiness you really want to make? I know this. We grew up very, very low on the money spectrum, and it was stressful as all get out. And I would get a Christmas gift and then feel super guilty that my mom had to sacrifice so much to buy me a gift. Like literally, I was sad as a child at Christmas when I got a big gift rather than happy because I knew the sacrifice my mom made. Well, I vowed I didn't ever want it to be that way when I grew up. And so I made a decision to make more money when I grew up, but it was one small step at a time. Today, I'm going to teach you with one of the best money experts I've ever met, Aaron West, how to grow your wealth so you can have all the happiness because you have the freedom.
Welcome to The Good Mood Show. Here's your host, Matt O'Neill.
So this show is about money, and it's one of those taboo subjects. You're not supposed to talk about money. And, you know, when I grew up, we definitely didn't talk about money because we didn't have any. You know, my family, my dad was this big spender. Every time he had a little bit of money in his pocket, we did fun things and it was always gone. And we wouldn't know where it went, but he was the man of the household and he got to decide what he did with the money. And then my mom, she was a worrier because we didn't have any money. So she worried about like how she was going to actually buy groceries and put shoes on her feet. Well, my dad ended up kind of abandoning our family when I was five. And then he couldn't keep a job. So he didn't ever have money to pay child support. My mom was a secretary. She was making $25,000 a year, four kids, raising four kids on $25,000 a year. It was, you know, it was tight. It was really, really tight. We would go to the grocery store and my mom would hand me a calculator. And I was like, you know, 6 years old. And she would say, I need you to add up every item, the cost of every item as I put it in the cart. And our total for the week is $25. And it's got to feed all five of us. So we would be adding it up. And by the time we got to the checkout line, I didn't know I should be embarrassed, but it was probably pretty embarrassing for my mom. We would have to put items back at the checkout line of the grocery store just about every week. And there's like a long line of people behind us, like waiting for us to figure out which of the food items to prioritize. And, you know, so how what we do with our money can really decide if we're going to be in a good mood or a bad mood. Because if we're strapped for cash like we were when I was growing up, it's super, super stressful. And I took on that stress from my mom. I felt a high level of responsibility. I got a job when I was, you know, like eight years old. I was cutting grass, like just trying to like help the family. And, you know, and then I vowed at that time that I'm going to have enough money to live the life I want to live when I grow up. Well, just recently, I had the incredible opportunity to go to Vermont and take a two-day-long goal-setting class with the Aaron West. Aaron is one of the best goal-setting experts I've ever met, and we are fortunate to have Aaron on the show to talk today about how to get our money in the place it needs to be to have great moods. Aaron, welcome to the Good Mood Show.
Thank you so much for having me. And I have to tell you, I haven't heard that story from you. And it resonates with me so much. I'm the oldest of six kids. My dad didn't leave, but he was never comfortable with money. And we just never had money. I didn't even realize that we were poor. The difference between you and I is you realized you were poor because you were adding up the numbers. We had a ton of love in my family, but we just never had any money. So your story actually rang really true to me. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. You know, and now you're so successful. And you know, as I'm watching you in this goal setting workshop, you're talking about meeting Richard Branson and like traveling all over the world and having these incredible experiences. And like, congratulations on deciding that you were going to go big and then living such a big life. But, you know, we're going to talk today about like what our relationship with money is. And I know you had said that there are a couple different types of relationships that we can have with money. Would you mind getting into what those relationships are?
You bet. You know, and I think you said that is really kind of important to preface all of this with is that money is not the end all be all, But by having money, you're able to live the life that you want and be able to become the person that you want to be. It makes all of those things so much easier. And yet, when we go to dinner with someone, with another couple, the three things nobody talks about are sex, money, and politics. Those are the three taboos that just happen. And really, money is just a tool. It's a pawn that we use in our lives to be able to win our own personal game of chess or our own personal game of life. And because nobody talks about it, most of us have a preconceived idea or a train track is what I call it, a preconceived train track of how we deal with money. And for a large part of the population, which I was a card-carrying, flag-bearing member, are spenders. I never met something that I wasn't okay spending money on. And I spent my whole life really out earning my spending. I created a very successful career in my previous career before real estate. And I was as broke when I was making $22,000 a year as I was making $125,000 a year. And I couldn't understand why.
Yeah, it's so common, right? That as soon as the income goes up, the lifestyle immediately expands to collect everything that was just made and keep us in the exact same financial position, still paycheck to paycheck, or having just the same amount in our savings account or same proportion in our savings account as we did when we were making a lot less. In 2005, just as I was getting into real estate, I got the book by T. Harv Eckert called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind.
I love that book.
Man, I studied it front and back and back and front. I bought a video. I was watching his video all the time because it just started to open up my eyes to the way that he was saying we get brainwashed in youth about all of these bad, negative things about money. And he said, finish this sentence. Money is the root of, and you're like, all evil. He's like, money doesn't grow. And you're like, on trees. And he has all these sayings about like money can't buy happiness, right? And so he's like, do you realize all of the sayings that are stuck in your head about money are negative? And that was a big eye opener for me. And the other concept he said that like really struck a chord with me was that he's like, you've got a money container. He said, picture this container over top of your head. And that money container is a certain size and it's whatever your current savings account is. And he said, if you get more money, like let's say you win the lottery or something like that, you're going to spend it all or blow it all. And you're going to go back to your current comfort level of your container. And he said, if you want to have a bigger container, you just need to decide that you're going to have a bigger container. That idea, I was like, wow, okay, it kind of made sense. I always had about $2,000 in my savings account and then I was making more money and I still had about $2,000 in my savings account. And I'm like, I want a bigger container. I want a $10,000 container. So anyway, those are some of the things that like really struck with me. I also am a spender. I love having fun.
Then this is all going to resonate with you. And so the other side of it is the saver. And to a saver, money means stability. And when they take that money in and they put it into their savings account, to them, that is stability. And to take any money out of that is taking away from the stability that they've built for themselves. The challenge for both of those relationships, the spender and the saver, is that they're both 100% based in fear. And I was afraid of having money. A saver is afraid of the loss of stability of spending any of that money. And it wasn't until some people asked me some questions, and I'm going to have you do this, Matt, because this was a really powerful exercise for me. Ask yourself what you would do right now for those that are listening. If you won $1 million, what would you do with it? And for most people, for spenders, they're like, I would buy a car, I would go on some trips. Everybody says I would buy a house, invest, but the reality is with what you just said from T. Harv Eker is that you're going to try and get yourself back to whatever size bucket you have over your head. And it's the reason that
that's so eye opening. Yeah. Because as soon as you said it, I was like, oh man, I would go ahead. I would invest it. But immediately, as you say, I was going to get myself back to where I am. I was going to invest it all and get right back to where I am right now.
And it was at that point that I really made a conscious decision that I was going to go into down the rabbit hole of what my relationship with money was and how can I start building wealth?
Was this Brian Buffini?
Yes.
Man, that's so cool that you got to know him. I saw him speak one time and I was really impressed.
He has been an amazing mentor of mine for a long, long time. And so what I did to start my wealth building journey is I had to create stewardship somehow. And for most of us, a savings account for the spenders is simply an emergency account. You know, you put $4,000, $2,000, $100, whatever it is, and the tires go bald and you're like, I'm going and I'm pulling money out of that savings account, right? And what I had to do was I had to create what I called my not my money account. And what I did is I went to the bank, I opened up another savings account, and in that account, I renamed it. You know, you can rename it online to whatever it is. And I named it not my money. And I made the commitment that I would not make my house payment before I touched that money because it wasn't my money. It was for the Aaron that I had the potential to be and the wealth that I wanted to create. And I started out with taking $50 from every paycheck and it went into that account and I still had a savings account that I pulled from, but that not my money account was not my money. And as I realized that 50 wasn't changing my life, then it went to 100 and then it went to 500 and then it went to, and I started accumulating money in that account, it became the place that I was able to do my very first investment from because I had shown that discipline of stewardship with that money. And then there was an itch that had to be scratched because I was not used to seeing that much money in there. And I went and I bought my first property. And then I was back down to zero. And I started putting money into that not my money account. And it works really well for both savers and spenders because with savers, I have a client that sold a huge piece of property in 99, so 25 years ago now, to build a school on. And they paid her $800,000 for this piece of land that they built this school on. And she has $800,000 in her savings account right now because she's so afraid of losing that money for her kids that it just sits there. It could be $2 million now if she would have just invested it in something.
How many years ago?
Safe. 25.
She sold it 20. She has $800,000 that she sat on for 25 years.
Sat on, but that's what savers do.
Oh my gosh!
Because that money
wouldn't just be $2 million. Over 25 years, we're talking 10 million.
But that's the problem with the saver's relationship with money is that stability is so important and that fear is so compelling that they don't want to lose it that they're not willing to do any risk. And by creating that not my money account, say it again.
There is risk. If she spent that $800,000 in an uneducated way, she could lose it. So I understand the fear of risk. And let's talk about some practical tips because I've studied money a lot. I know that you have too. And you know, my buddy Adam Roach. We were having a conversation. And so, you know, Aaron and I are friends from GoBundance. And GoBundance is a men's group. And one of the things that we do at GoBundance that's very unique is that we actually talk about exactly how much money we have, exactly how much money we're making, exactly how much money we're saving, how much we're investing. It's all on like a baseball card, what we call a one sheet. And every single person that you meet knows exactly what you're doing with money. It's like you're naked all of a sudden because no one talks about this stuff. But the beauty in that is that you're naked with your money. And so people can see, hey, where maybe your blind spots are and so I started to get a lot better when I started to join this group and talk about money. But I was talking with Adam Roach about it and he was telling me all the money he wanted. I'm like, man, why do you want that much? And he said to me, money is freedom. He said, when I have this amount of money, I'm completely free and I could do anything I want to do. And that's his number one value in life. And I really liked that answer. You know, what are your thoughts about money creating freedom?
Well, it's a tool. And if you want to dig a hole, the better shovel you have and the bigger shovel you have and the equipment that you have means that you can dig a bigger hole faster and deeper. And money is the tool of our life that by having the right mindset and tools in your arsenal, you're able to accomplish so much more and have the freedom that he talked about. I know this is the podcast about being happy. Is money doesn't cause happiness, because there are a ton of miserable millionaires out there. But money gives you the ability to be able to step back from the daily grind that you're in and start working on yourself a little bit more.
There are a lot of miserable broke people too. So I just want to say, I don't know if the percentage of misery in millionaires is the same as the misery in broke, or if it's higher or if it's lower. I just know I've met people at all financial statuses, and there's lots of miserable ones, and then there's lots of super grateful, generous, happy ones. And this is one of the things that T. Harv Eckert helped me understand, because I had all these, my dad had a tremendous amount of judgment. Anyone who had money was bad. They were evil. They cheated to get there. They were unkind-hearted people. And then when I started selling real estate, I met all these millionaires, and a bunch of them were amazing, like the most grateful, kind, loving people I'd ever met. And so I had to change what I thought about people with money, because if I wanted to be one of them, I didn't want to hate myself, right?
You know, and even the quotes that people use, money is the root of all evil, but that's not the quote. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. It's easier for a rich man to get through a camel to get through an eye of a needle than a rich man to get into the kingdom of God. But they say rich, not wealthy. And there's a difference. You know, I want to be wealthy. My life is all about building wealth, because wealth is abundance. Rich is a state of account. Wealth is a state of mind. And so for me and my family, I want to build wealth, because that encompasses all of my life. And I think for a lot of people, when they have these stories that they've been told over and over and over again, they really get ingrained down into the deepest part of your soul. And until you start having conversations about money and knowing your net worth. I mean, you were asking, you know, some of the practical and tactical things that you can do to start changing your relationship with money. I think the very first and most important one, and no matter what the number is figuring out what your net worth is. The first time I figured it out, I was a negative $127,000. That was my net worth. I was better off. But by knowing that number and keeping that in front of you, one of three things happens. One is you lead the exact same life and the number stays exactly the same. Two is you make poor decisions when it comes to money and that number gets worse. Or three, you make good decisions about money and that number increases.
Three is the most likely outcome, because whatever we start tracking and measuring, we just automatically start to improve.
And you need to celebrate the successes. When you go from $1,000 of net worth to $1,500 of net worth, people go, "Oh, I'm so far behind." And money is just a tool. It doesn't matter. It's making progress, tracking that progress, and celebrating. I celebrated the first time I had $1,000 in my Not My Money account, and something came up, and I didn't spend it. That was a huge celebration, and we were talking about $1,000. And I think for a lot of us, there's so much pressure on us, and there's so much noise surrounding money that we're afraid to look under the carpet and see where we're at. And I would encourage everybody to take 10 minutes and say, how much do I have in my bank account? How much do I own my credit cards? If I own my house, what's the value? What's my mortgage? And you take all the positives, you subtract the negatives, and that's your number. And then put that number down and say, I'm going to look at that number next month and see if it improves by a dollar. And if it improves by a dollar, you've now started the journey of making better financial decisions to put yourself on that track towards wealth.
Yeah, I love what you said about the difference between money and wealth. And I was listening to a Ben Hardy book, and I can't remember which one it was, but he described the difference. He said, money is just a measure of this paper accounting, but wealth is your lifestyle. And so what we don't want more money. It's just paper, right? It doesn't do anything for us until we turn it into wealth. And wealth is how we live. So, not wealth like being a spender, like you were saying, where all of a sudden I spend everything and then now I'm all anxious and afraid because I'm negative 100,000 in net worth. That's not really wealth if we're doing things and then feeling awful about it. Wealth is like our lifestyle where we feel emotionally inside and then also the way that we're living on the outside. And I think that's like a true measure of our success and happiness when it comes to money. I studied Dave Ramsey right around the same time, 2006. He came to my town and he was up on stage and then all the things he was saying made sense to me. And I'm like, man, my family, if we had known this when I was young, things would have been so different because we had, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of credit card debt. Dave was up on stage and he took these big chains and he wrapped these chains around himself. And he said, you know, you get one credit card and then you get the car payment, then you get another card, you get the house payment, you get another credit card. And all of a sudden he's just wrapped up in all these chains. And he's like, and now you're not free. You're a slave to all the payments. And he recommended paying off the smallest amount, the smallest debt. You know, let's say there's one credit card that only had $1,000 on it. He said, attack that $1,000 with all your might. I don't care about the highest interest rate. He said, get the smallest number gone so one of these chains can go. And he takes a chain off. And he's like, then you go after the next smallest one. Let's say you only have $2,000 left on a car. He's like, you attack that a payment with all your might. And then now that payment's gone. He dropped another chain. And he said, each time you drop one of these, that monthly minimum payment is gone. And so eventually you start getting all your money capacity back. And so I did that. I followed it. I went after my credit cards and paid them off. Then I went after my car and paid it off. Then I went after my wife's car and paid it off. And then all of a sudden we didn't have all this debt anymore. And I had more living income to live on and start to create that wealth.
In The Richest Man in Babylon, which was written in the 30s, it's a parable like in biblical times. The rule number one for building wealth is you pay yourself first.
10%.
It's the reason that the government takes taxes out before you get it is because they know that if they don't take their money first, they're never going to see it because once you take your money and you take ownership, it's gone. And so taking that money, paying off those things, but then also taking some of your money and putting it into a place to where you start feeling stability because you have that, not my money or savings or whatever it is that you call it. And then you attack everything. But first, you have to put on your own mask. And that's putting the little disciplines in place. And it doesn't matter if it's $10, $100, $1,000, whatever it is, it's the discipline at $10 that turns into wealth down the road, because the discipline is the secret to building wealth.
So I wanted to go into the 10 ways, and I want to get your opinion of this. The authors Elizabeth Dunn and Michael Norton wrote a book called Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending. And this is the Good Mood Show. So not all of our money needs to go to just buying stocks and real estate investments. Sometimes we got to go on vacation, right? And do some fun things because the spice of life is enjoying it too. Us spenders, we love these types of things. Her number one tip for having happiness from your money, could you guess what she would say the number one thing you should buy is?
No.
Life experiences.
Experience? Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was going to say trips, but I knew that wasn't the right word. Yeah, experiences.
Trips, concerts, travel. Having experiences will create more happiness than having things. And I know you are, I saw all the trips that you have coming up and that, you know, you're going to Alaska doing this incredible salmon fishing trip that you've done before, but you loved it so much you're going back. why are experiences so happy? Why is that a better way to spend our money than driving the newest car?
Well, two things to that I would say is experiences are amazing when they don't add to your financial burden. So when you take your money and you save it and you spend it on an experience that you have allotted to an experience, there's so much joy that comes from that. When you spend money on an experience that you don't have that adds to your burden, it's a hit a crack, but it doesn't give you the fulfillment and joy that being able to pay for it is. So that I want to start with just a little caveat
right.
of that.
Because of the spender mentality. Right.
Because of the spender mentality, it's like, yeah. I want to go on as many experiences as possible. I think that when we travel, we have, we're purposeful with our travel. I want to learn something and I want to meet somebody new. Those are the two purposes when we travel, is we travel with intention of what can I learn and what can I experience and who can I meet when we travel. And when you have the ability to do it and with intention, there's so much joy that comes from travel.
You're nailing it. It's why are these experiences so joyful in our lives? Yeah. And if you're, and I agree with you, every time we're learning something new or experiencing something novel, life is spicy and fun. You know, another one of my favorite books is a book called The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. In that book, they say that if you go to work, come home, watch Netflix, eat dinner, next day, go to work, come home, watch Netflix, eat dinner, and you do that every day for 6 months, there are no memorable moments in that 6 months. And you look back and you're like, where did the time go? Man, I can't believe that 6 months is gone. What happened? They said, if you had a peak experience, like a big trip somewhere in there, and you think back on your 6 months, immediately your brain says, oh yeah, remember when we were fishing, we caught those huge salmon in Alaska and we saw that Kodiak bear that almost killed us like crazy, right? They said you slow down time by having these peak experiences because you actually pack more spice in your life.
What we're talking about now are first world problems, because both of us have built wealth. And there's a couple of things that I think are really important when you talk about this and people who are starting on this journey here. And one of the things that in GoBundance, we do this show called 728. It's the letter 728. And what we do is interview entrepreneurs who've gone from $1 million net worth to 10 million. I mean, that's a big problem, right? But there are so many lessons about building wealth that we've learned from those interviews. And there's seven, really. I'm going to cover the first couple of them because I think it's really important for people to hear this. The first is making a decision, because building wealth is not something you do by accident. It's something that you have to make a decision that this is something that you want to do. And it can be from reading Richest Man in Babylon or The Millionaire Mind or Dave Ramsey or whatever that looks like for you. But there has to be a catalyst and a trigger where you say, I'm going to stop living the life that I'm living now so that I can build wealth. The rule number two in the seven lessons is that it's always harder than you think it is. And the reason most people quit is because they are looking to hit a home run. And when they don't hit a home run, they go, well, why would I even do this at all? And it is an evolution of who you have the ability to become and the person who you have to be worth $500,000 or $1 million or $10 million. Those are all different versions of yourself that are very different than who you are today as a person. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I want to build wealth, the number one thing you have to do is make a freaking decision that this is going to be something that's important to you, and then start doing something about it. And then understand that it's going to be hard. There are sacrifices that you have to make. There are hard decisions that you have to make. We didn't have furniture in our front room for 3 years because we made the commitment that we were living on our salary and not spending any money until we could afford to buy that furniture. Those are hard decisions. And it was embarrassing to have people to our house and have this huge room, not huge room, to have this room that was literally totally empty. But those are the things that gave us the ability to become the next version of ourselves on our wealth building journey, to where the person that I am today is very different than that human that said, I'm going to put $50 into my Not My Money account.
Because but you had to start, right?
You
had to start. You know, one of the wealthiest people I know is David Osborne, and I know you're good friends with him. And and David said, it, you know, now it's worth over $100 million, which is crazy. He said, you know what it looks like growing this kind of wealth? He's like, it's not glamorous. It looks like driving used cars. And when he said that, I was like, huh, I'm driving used cars. Right? But that's along the wealth building journey, is that he was prioritizing having Not My money to go ahead and invest, and a new car was in the way of his priority of who his future was going to be.
Nothing is given, everything is earned. And we've gotten away from that as a society with the instant gratification of Instagram famous and these people, you know, 19 years old traveling the world. I know a lot of those people and they are frauds. And anybody who wants to sell you, 99% of the time, the person, not 99, but it's a pretty high number. When they're selling you something, it's because they couldn't do it themselves. Because if they were doing it themselves, they wouldn't need to sell you anything. Because if they were as successful as they said they were, they would be giving it away, or they wouldn't be making it a business for them. And so be careful with those people, but know that, success shows up like hard work.
Yeah, it does look like hard work, doesn't it? That's interesting, because the Good Mood Show is not something that I've actually, it's an investment. I make an investment in the Good Mood Show because I feel it's one of the ways that I can give back to society, because I've been blessed by so many people. I've read so many books. I've had all these mentors. So I'm actually spending money every month to put this message out for free. And here you are coming on the show. I know you don't have a product to sell. You don't have any agenda in this at all, except the two of us were talking and you said you had some really good advice to help people understand how money could improve their life. And I was really excited to have that conversation.
I no longer need to sell anything. I work for time. And, you know, I think of the barrel of monkeys analogy is that, truly, we are all one of those barrel of monkeys, and we should have one hand up for the people that are higher than us, that have in every area of their life, in money, finances, spirituality, relationships. And then you need to have one hand down, and that's to help the people that have been where you are at. And if you live your life like that, and you're humble enough to ask for help from the people that are higher in whatever area it is that you want to excel in, and then you're humble enough to put a hand down with no expectations for those people that are on their journey, that are where you were, you can't help but be successful.
Yeah, but both of us, think about us. We both told our stories today. We both talked about where we came from. And there was the time when I was 25 years old and got that first book from T. Harv Eker that started to open my eyes that there was a new world. And then there was a first step, and there was the first $1,000 in the Not My Money account, you know, and it has been at this point 20 years of hard work, but all of the, you know, I did continue to put myself in rooms of people who were smarter than me about things. GoBundance was one of the biggest ones that helped me with that. And then was humble enough to say, hey, I don't know this stuff. I don't have any investment homes. I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, and that was kind of a embarrassing moment for me to admit it, but nobody in the group said, you know, hey, you suck. They were all like, well, let me show you.
Can I give a life nugget to the listeners right now?
Yeah.
This is a life nugget, and it's a lesson, is that truly successful people are constantly looking for people to help because they had so many people pour into them. Ask for help and know this. Here's the nugget for you. Anytime you sit down with a successful person, they are going to give you homework. They're either going to say, I read this great book, I listened to this podcast, you should try this. And what they're doing is they're testing you. Because we get asked by sayers, I call them sayers all the time. I want to be successful. What do I need to do to be successful? And we're looking for doers. And some of the best relationships that I have with some amazing wealthy people is because they said, oh, I listened to this podcast and I went and I listened to that podcast. And then I called them up and I said, hey, I listened to that podcast for the last couple of weeks and it's really good. Could we get together and talk about that? And the answer is always yes. Because if you show yourself as a doer, successful people are willing to pour their time into you because time is the most valuable thing. So in this journey of happiness, in this journey of wealth building, in this journey of creating better relationships, when you find those people who are more successful than you in those areas, go to them because they actually want to help people because they were.
Oh, so beautiful, man. And you're right. That's the way. That's the they do want to see that you're going to put in the effort, roll up your sleeves, because it doesn't work unless you do, and it won't. And every person wants to more money.
Nobody is willing to do it. But if you listen the next time you talk to somebody successful, and you're looking for the homework, and you find it, and you call them back, they will pour themselves into you. And if you call them back and just say, hey, I'd like to meet for lunch again, they're going to be busy because they don't work for money. Their time is their most valuable asset now. And they only want to give their time. I only want to give my time to people who are willing to put in the work. And I sat down for an hour and a half today with a woman who went to a goal writing class that I did. And she called me up and she said, Aaron, I've done everything you've asked to do. Would you be willing to sit down with me for an hour? And it was almost 2 hours that I spent with her because she was a doer, and I want to help her be successful.
That's what I was just about to say, man. When you sent that text to the group from your goal setting workshop that only 4 of us had turned in our homework out of 24, I was astonished. And yeah, patting myself on the back, I was one of the 4. I don't know if I was number 1, but man,
you weren't.
Okay. I was
you
close.
Did good.
I was in the top 4. I know that.
You were in the top 4 for sure.
But
that's the thing.
I just want to, y'all, this is Aaron West. You need to look this guy up. If you can spend any time around Aaron West or listen to other podcasts he's on, I just invested my money and my time to fly to Vermont to spend 2 full days with this man, having him teach me how to become a better goal setter. And Aaron, of the whole conference, because I was there all week at the Elite and then at the Mastermind, those 2 days were the most powerful 2 days, probably of my year. I'm serious.
That means so much, man. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for pouring into me and thank you for showing up today and serving this Good Mood Show community. It's been an absolute pleasure. If people want to learn more from you, what's the best way they can get in touch?
You know, really, I'm like a secret agent. You can reach me on Instagram. I'm finally starting to put some more stuff out on there. It's the Aaron C. West, all one word. And I'd be happy to connect. If you send me a DM and want to chat about something, I'm happy to give back because so many people have given to me.
But you better be a doer.
But you better be a doer because you'll get one call.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Good Mood Show with Matt O'Neill. For free resources, videos, and materials about getting into your best moods, head over to thegoodmoodshow.com. See you next week, same time, same place.